Mr. Boxall, Real 12. We're talking about you're on the Devonshire on the way back, and I've just checked my dates. So that was October to, and you got back about the in early November. It was August. You got back in early October. And where did you go then? Was that when you went to Colchester?
No, yes, we went by train from Liverpool to Colchester, and there we were in Roman Way Barracks. Colonel Turner Kane was still commanding, and I can see him now walking up the road into Roman Way camp in the morning, unwinding his scarf from round his neck, ready to inspect the guard. And by Christ, if that wasn't right on the top, you got to know about it very quickly.
You obviously found him a challenging.
I found him to be, he was a crusty old so-and-so at the best of times, but he was always fair. He never bored you out or anything if you did your best. But there was only one person, one sergeant I had, who, for some unknown reason, he couldn't face, and that was a chap called Appleton. And no matter what Appleton did, it was wrong. I don't know why, but anyway, as I say, I always found him fair. He didn't chase you or bore you out if you did what you could, and if he asked you a question, you answered it or said you didn't know. If you tried to bluff him, you'd had it, because he knew the answer before he asked. So that was the end of that. But then, after about 6 months, I was warned I was going to be posted.
Now, anything happened in the 6 months? I mean, what's
no, not really. It was just settling into England after having been out of England for 3 years. It was just settling back to being peacetime soldier in England, really.
So routine duties.
Yeah, routine duties. We went up to Stamford, here in Norfolk, the battle area, on occasions to do exercises, but mostly it was sort of training and weapon training and drills, marching, whatever.
Now, so the next thing, it was in May 1955.
Yep. I was then posted to be a PSI with the TA, 4th Battalion TA.
That's
Permanent
Regiment,
Permanent Staff Instructor. And I went to Yarmouth, to the drill hall in York Road in Yarmouth.
Now, this was still the 4th Battalion of the Royal Norfolk.
That was still 4th Battalion of the Royal Norfolk. In actual fact, we were still Royal Norfolk because we didn't become the East Anglian Regiment until 1959.
Now, The York Road Drill Hall, can you describe the setup at York Road Drill Hall? I mean, we've not discussed drill halls before. How was a drill hall organised?
Well, there was a large hall, which was the drill part of it, and then at the end, one end of it, the entrance, there was a quarter and an office for the PSI and the company commander when he was there. But mainly it was an office for the permanent staff instructor, and he was the only regular soldier in the company.
Now, what was the role of the PSI?
PSI was to see that, keep the drill all organised, see that the things were all laid out for training when we had training nights. My nights were Tuesday night. Tuesday night I had to go to Loddon, to the drill hall there, because we had a platoon. Loddon, L-O-D-D-O-N. We had a platoon there, and I used to go over there on Tuesday nights. Thursday night was Thursday morning. I used to have to go up to Britannia Barracks to regiment to battalion headquarters for PSI's admin day, and then Thursday night was our drill night for the company.
Now, what would you do at Loddon? Tell us about that first.
Well, once again, it would be training, whatever, whether it would be drill or whether it would be weapon training or anything that could be done inside a drill hall. We once again had a small drill hall there. And I used to drive over in my 1500 weight truck. And on occasions during the winter, when it was really foggy, the captain who was with me used to have to walk along in front of the truck guiding me through the country lanes. But it was always drill, whatever, and whatever training you could carry out in the evenings.
What standard of drill do you think? I mean, you were a regular, you'd used to national service, but you were a regular. How did you think the territories stood up as drill?
They didn't do too badly. I'll tell you later on how well they did, when we come to, when I was RSM later on in the period of my soldiering. But they always tried. They came there, obviously they were volunteers. Obviously they wanted to be there, they weren't there. When I was with A Company, we had a lot of national servicemen who were, who'd done their 2 years but were on reserve and had to come for training every so often and put in a certain amount of time on training. But they gradually phased that out. And I was there whilst I used to have to go around or get them to bring in their kit. And once or twice I had to go around to houses to get the kit. And I can remember distinctly going to one place at Galston in near Great Yarmouth, and I knocked on the door. It was a prefab, and the bloke came to the door and I said, "I want your kit," and he said, "It's out in the bloody shed, get it." And I went out in the shed and it lay there actually rotten. It was so rotten I refused to collect it. It just lay there for months and months, and the boots were all rotten and green, and the uniform was all in tatters, and I was sure to collect it. I went back and told, when I went into the admin day the following Thursday, I told the quartermaster, and he said, "Oh, well, we'll have to write it off."
Now, what about admin day at Britannia Barracks? What was that about?
Well, we used to go up there. That's when we got paid, because then you still had pay parades, so we used to get paid, and then we used to have, we'd have a session with the adjutant, who was Major Dillon, Brian Dillon. And he'd tell us what he wanted to, and then we'd have be marched into the CO, who was Lieutenant Colonel Reed, I think, at the time.
And what would you do with Brian Dillon? What would the admin session be?
Well, it'd be general sort of things about, whether we got any problems at the drill halls, or whether what we were going to do if we for training, and if we were going to go out on a weekend to wherever we were going. I mean, I think one weekend we went right up on the North Norfolk coast, and all the admin details, and so that we could go back and brief the company commander and what he's got to do for the training weekend. And it'd be the same if we were going out on to Stamford Battle Area.
Now, tell us about these, these weekend training sessions. Tell what they're like.
Well, you go out and do an exercise, be out with the company all night on the Saturday, go out on the Saturday afternoon, all day Sunday, and come in perhaps about 4 o'clock Sunday afternoon, get back to Yarmouth, and there they do training like a mock attack or dig in and the night, all the normal sort of training that infantry soldiers do.
And did you enjoy the job? I mean,
Well, it was entirely different to being with the battalion, because most of it was evenings and weekends. Well, all of it was evenings and weekends. The only time that you actually got to be doing anything during the day was when you went to camp. And that camp was was 14-day camp.
Tell us about that. That's summer camp.
Yes. Well, it was usually about April or May. When I joined the 4th Battalion, they were at Bodney on the TA camp. But then the following year we went to Tregantle in Cornwall. And for my shins, they made me in charge of the messing for some unknown reason. Oh, that involved making sure the cooks were there and making sure the stuff was cooked and generally dog's body to see that everything was there available, the food went out in containers if the battalion were out on training, whatever. I didn't enjoy that very much, but still, it was one of the jobs I got lumbered with.
Anything else about the summer camps?
No, not really. The second year, we were down near Colchester, and that year we did a lot of firing on the ranges and things like that, and training. But they tried to make sure we went to a different place each year. So they were my three camps with them. They were 14-day camps, and it was a normal training, whatever they wanted to do.
What did you do in during the normal day then? I know, you know, most of you just well,
as a PSI, we did a little less than we normally did because the company had a company sergeant major and TA company sergeant major, and he did most of the duties that the PSI had to do because he was the warrant officer there in charge. But so at camp, we got together as PSIs with the RSM and discussed various things, and we had a sergeant's mess evening where we invited the officers over. Then we had an officer's mess evening where they invited the warrant officer and the sergeants into the officer's mess. And things like that, more social than anything. I went there as a PSI, they used to have the mess open sort of nearly all the time over there. But I'll tell you later on what happened when I became RSM.
Now, what about, how did you get on with, I don't know who your company commander was of A Company.
Major Bolton.
How did you get on with Major, do you know his first name?
No, I don't, but it'll be in the book, I should think.
I'll what was he like?
Well, he was a TA Major.
What do you mean by that?
Well, they were civilians who had a Queen's Commission. Some of them thought they were the bee's knees, and some of them weren't. And that's as far as I'm going to say.
And what about the company sergeant major? You'd have to work pretty closely with him.
Well, he once again was a bit of a passenger. I mean,
do you remember his name?
Emerson, I think.
Emerson.
Yeah, Emerson. He tended to do as least as he possibly could. I mean, when I went to be PSI, we went out on an exercise. I did all the company sergeant major's work, and he sat in the truck and rode around enjoying himself, and I didn't think a great deal about that. Some of them obviously tried their best. Some of them were there just to get the money and whatever they could. It was an entirely different sort of life to what I'd led up until then, so perhaps I was a bit more critical than I ought to have been.
Anything else about them before, in July 57, you went back to the doctor?
I did my 2 years there. My wife and family were in the drill hall. We had a quarter at the end in the drill hall. You lived on the job, which wasn't the best thing to do. I mean, you were always at beck and call. If someone wanted to call in, they expected to see you. But on the whole, Yarmouth, Great Yarmouth, wasn't a bad posting.
So next you went to 1st Battalion?
Went back to Easelone.
To the 1st Battalion?
To the 1st Battalion.
And what company were you sent to?
I was back, then I went to B Company first off. And I had Major Creasy, Tim Creasy.
Now, what did you think of Tim Creasy as a company commander? I mean, he went on to great things.
Yeah, he was a blunt officer. I mean, he called a spade, and he didn't call it anything different. And he was a good officer. I knew him very well because when I went to the battalion in 1948, he played right back at hockey, and I played left back. So we obviously got to know each other fairly well. And when I went back, he was a company commander of B Company, and we got on very well. In fact, he was one of the best officers I ever served with.
What was so good about him? Because he did go on to be...
Well, yes, what was good about him was, as I say, he called a spade. There was no side to him. He wasn't toppy-nosed. He'd come and play, if we were playing tennis with officers versus sergeants, he'd come and play tennis, and in fact he played me two or three times. He always beat me, but I always found him to be a gentleman. He once again was like Turner Kane. He was quite blunt, and he didn't suffer fools gladly.
But was no fool himself.
Oh, was no fool himself. No, he later became Lieutenant General Sir Timothy Creasy. So,
now, who was the colonel at the time?
I think it was Bill Brinkley.
Colonel Brinkley. What was he like?
Well, I'd known him since, well, he was in the 1st Battalion before the war as a 2nd Lieutenant. Well, I didn't know him very much then. I'd known him sort of since Berlin. He was all right. He was an adequate officer. Let's say no more.
Didn't stand out like Turner.
No. Bill, I can always remember in Berlin, I went to Major Cooper Key's house one Sunday, and Bill was there, and he looked at me, and I was in a sports jacket and trousers and a Mac, and he said to me, "You're a blooming sight better dressed than I am, Sergeant Major. Look at me, look at me." And he opened his duffel coat, and well, I don't think I'd have been seen at the rubbish dump with what he was wearing, but anyway, that was Bill Brinkley. He wasn't the smartest soldier, but he was a good CO.
Now,
what
were the barracks like? What, did you have your family with you at East Lone?
I didn't, not originally, but then later on, well, after a couple of months, Jean came out and we lived in a quarter, and we're in an army quarters, and they were quite nice.
What were they like? Describe a bit.
Well, they were very much like this house, you know, a living room, a dining room, couple of bedrooms.
Was it in the barrack area?
No, it was all separate. It was a separate family's area. And, they were all right. So you actually got away from barracks sort of every day. I found one of the things that, you know, for a little while I was, I lived in barracks because when I was in at East Lone, I was B Company, and then I became Headquarter Company. I was a senior sergeant major and posted to Headquarter Company, and I was there when we became lost, being the Royal Norfolk Regiment, and became 1st Battalion East Anglian Regiment, and we amalgamated with the Suffolks, and they came one day. And we finished up with over 450 in Headquarter Company.
Now, tell me, what was the difference of being CSM of a Headquarter Company? It's more complicated, isn't it?
Well, yes, on a rifle company, you've got your people in your platoon, you've got three sergeants who look after them, platoon sergeants, and you've got a sort of entity that you're able to look after and see. Where with Headquarter Company, everybody's specialist, done a specialist job. You've got the cooks, you've got the MT drivers, you've got the signallers, you've got the pay corps, and all the different things, admin people, quartermaster staff. And so to get a parade of Headquarter Company was fairly difficult, because no one wanted to let their blokes go. I mean, I can remember on one occasion we had a battalion cross country run, and the pay corps major sent a note across to the company commander to say the pay section couldn't attend the cross-country run, they were too busy doing the pay. And then the morning of the cross-country run, for some unknown reason, it was cancelled. And in the afternoon, across came passes for all the pay corps to have a 48-hour pass for the weekend. And I said to the company commander, who was Major Farrelly, Peter Farrelly, I said to the company commander, "This isn't on." I said, "This morning they couldn't go on a cross-country run. This afternoon, because it's cancelled, they've got time enough to have a 48-hour pass." So he said, "No, they haven't, Sergeant Major. I'm not going to allow it." So he sent it back and said, "No." The pay major didn't like it, but he had to lump it, because he said to me, "Well, why can't they have it?" And I said, "Well, they couldn't go on a cross-country run. If they're so busy they can't do that, they're so busy they can't have a 48-hour pass, can they?" I wasn't very popular, but there you are. That was my view, and they didn't get their 48-hour pass. I mean, you used to run up against things like that. I mean, it wasn't so easy as a company to run.
Did you enjoy the challenge?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it was all right. I didn't mind. I mean, I've been a fairly independent person all my life, and I managed to have my way when I wanted things done. Even when things got a bit sticky sometimes, I always managed to sort it out. And the company commander backed me, so I was fortunate.
Now, what did you think of Peter Farrelly?
No, I must be very careful. Now, he was all right. He was... I'd known him quite a while. He wasn't very discipline-minded. But his one saving grace was that they we had a muster parade every morning, and people had to attend. And the only way that they could be excused was if he'd excused them or I'd excused them. And I can remember one morning we had 45 people on a charge for not having been attending muster parade. And he went along the line and said, "What you got to say? Did you get my permission to be absent? No, sir. Did you get the Sergeant Major's permission to be absent? No, sir. Right, 7 day CB." And that was it. He booked everything, had to, they all had to attend muster parade unless they were excused or unless they were on duty.
And he backed you up in
this? Oh, yes, he always backed. Yeah.
So though he wasn't particularly disciplined himself,
no, he
made sure he backed you up.
Yeah.
And what about the, you did some training periods at Senilaga training area.
Yeah.
Do you remember what sort of thing you were doing?
Well, yes, that was once again, we'd go up there, live in the huts, and we'd be out on training on the ranges, probably firing weapons, doing field exercises, going out overnight or a couple of nights exercise and digging in and doing the things that you normally do training for war.
Was there anything new that you, new weapons,
new
tactics?
Not then, no. No, we were still using the same old things, the Bren guns, and we did have different rifles. We did have the newer rifles instead of the Lee Enfields that we used to have.
Which ones were these? SLR?
Yes, SLRs, yeah.
Now, what did you think of the SLR?
Didn't like them very much.
Can you talk about that?
Cause well, the way I always looked at it was that's all right having a self-loading rifle, that's all right having a weapon that fires 2,000 rounds a minute, but where do you carry all the ammunition? Because with the old Lee Enfield rifle, you could probably get 10 or 20 rounds off in a minute. But with an SLR, you could probably get rid of 200 or 300 rounds in a minute. Now, that's all right, but you've got to carry the ammunition. Has got to be carried, and it's got to be supplied. And it's a far more difficult job to supply and carry 200 rounds than it is to carry 20. So I found that that's all right. All these modern weapons are all right, but you've got to be able to carry the supply and the ammunition for them. If you run out of ammunition, you might just throw the flaming thing away, because it's not going to do you any good. It's all right to knock nails into bits of wood, I suppose, with a buck, but other than that...
Now, you played, still playing hockey at a very high level.
Oh, yes,
You're not getting too old for it, then.
No,
you played for the battalion.
I played for the battalion, and for two infantry div. And when we moved up to Berlin, I played for British Troops Berlin.
That's a very high standard.
Well, yeah, I'd played all my life. Well, not all my life, but I'd played since I was 16 odd.
And not getting too old, though.
No. In fact, when I retired at 40, my wife said, "Right, you can put them hockey sticks away, you're finished." Because I'd been playing hockey, you know, weekdays, weekends, and we'd been away. When we were in Hong Kong, we went to the Portuguese island of Macau to play hockey one weekend, and so she'd had a fill of me playing hockey, I think.
Now, the other thing that really is important is that, you know, in 29th of August 1959, you became, you amalgamated with the 1st Battalion of Suffolk Regiment to form the 1st Battalion
the East Anglian Regiment.
Now, when did you first hear about it, and what did you think of it?
Well, we obviously heard about it when that was announced. I don't know the day that it was announced that the battalion was going into, or the regiment was going into suspended animation, and that we would be amalgamating with the Suffolk Regiment to become the 1st Battalion East Anglian Regiment. Obviously, we didn't think much about it at the time. That wasn't what we wanted. We couldn't see why they were getting rid of the county regiments. But that was what they decided to do. So, once again, the soldiers, you have to make the best of what you're given.
Now, what did you think about it being the Suffolks? I mean, was that who you'd have picked?
Well, not really. I wouldn't have picked anyone personally, but I suppose the Suffolks were a sister regiment. And it seemed the obvious thing to amalgamate, if they were going to amalgamate the Suffolk and Norfolk and Suffolk and Royal Norfolk Regiment to make up the 1st Battalion East Anglian Regiment. It worked.
And what preparations were made for it?
Well, obviously we had to make sure that things were ready for them to come in, and that we'd allocated them to the jobs that they got to do and things like that. But the actual preparation was done by for the amalgamation parade, when the two when the battalion paraded first as East Anglian Regiment, and we had four colours on parade instead of two. We had the Suffolk colours and the Royal Norfolk colours on.
So what do you remember of that parade?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure whether I was a sergeant major escort to the colours for that parade, or whether I did was one of the company sergeant majors. But certainly we did. I did do one or two parades where I was escort to the colours, and sergeant major escort to the colours. And we had a convention that when the colours were actually uncased on parade, they marched back to the officers' mess. And when they fell out, the officers, the two ensigns who carried the colours, had to buy champagne for the escort. That was one of the cue days. And of course, being escort to the colour, you always got off parade early, because they marched the colours off, and so you were finished a bit before the rest of them. Other than that, it was, you know, just...
Now, when you were the 1st Battalion East Anglia Regiment, you were...
I was still at CSM Headquarter Company. And we were moving to Berlin. Let me think. That was February. Yeah, it was about this time. Because my daughter was born on a Saturday, and the battalion, I think, moved on the Saturday. So it would have been about the 5th or 6th of February, 1960. And I was staying, I wasn't going to Berlin with the battalion, I was remaining in E Zone, and was going to be posted to Brigade Headquarters as Brigade Sergeant Major.
Now, but can we just talk about, how did you organise the union with the Suffolks? Did you have it as you mixed and matched the men, or did you have a company that was Suffolk?
No, they mixed, we mixed all in. There was no one Suffolk company and one Norfolk company. They were all posted in two companies, and they mixed in. We thought that it would be better to mix everybody in rather than keep them separate.
Now, why did you think that?
Well, because that wouldn't have been a good thing to do, to have a Suffolk company and a Norfolk company. In my opinion, that's the wrong way to go about it. If you're going to have a regiment, you've got to have a regiment, and you've got a battalion, you've got to have a battalion who work together, not say, well, I'm Suffolk and you're Norfolk, and sod you, Jack, I'm all right. So that is the reason I think that we took that we would mix them in.